Well, it's all right. Riding around in the breeze. Well, it's all right. If you live the life you please. Well, it's all right.
Welcome to the Dog Talk Show, brought to you in part by Wellness Pet Food. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk 1150. We've got a great show today. A guest I am very honored to have on the show because he's the author of one of the first dog books that I read when I was in high school, circa 1994, which was called The Intelligence of Dogs. And he has a more recent book out called The Modern Dog. Dr. Stanley Coren is on the show with us today. How Dogs Have Changed People and Society and Improved Our Lives. So we're going to be talking to him in just a minute. Hi, Eric.
Hey, Julie.
How's it going?
It's going great. Yeah, it's a wonderful Wednesday, and can't complain.
Yeah.
How about you?
I'm doing well. I'm really excited for this interview. I think we're going to have to, if Dr. Coren would agree to come back in maybe a couple months, I'm going to have to break this book down into a few interviews because it's just loaded with really cool information.
Well, so. my first question, of course, is the modern dog different than, last week's dog or,
last week's.
Well, you know what I'm saying? Like the dog from the 60s, is he different than the dog from today?
It's a good question.
We evolve. We wear different fashions and whatnot. And clearly, well, dogs are wearing different fashions because of
for
their owners.
Sure. Fashion at all, really. Well, let's bring Dr. Coren on air with us today. Welcome to the Dog Talk Show, Dr. Coren.
Hi there. Glad to be here.
Thanks for being here. So as I said, your book, The Intelligence of Dogs, was one of the first books that I read when I was in high school and just interested in dog behavior. And I'm just thrilled to have you on the show and to talk about your new book, The Modern Dog. And there's just so much in it. So I'm thinking we're probably going to have to break this book down in a few shows. So hopefully you'll be willing to come back on the show in a little bit and we can talk more about other parts of the book because we're not going to get through it in an hour. That's for sure.
Okay.
So why don't you, so Dr. Stanley Coren is a professor of psychology at the University of British Columbia and a renowned expert in dog behavior and dog-human interactions. And you live in Vancouver, BC, is that right?
That's right.
All right. So how did you, just a question about you first, how did your interest in dog-human interactions and dog behavior start? Because I know you've written a lot of books and you've been around for a while and you teach psychology, but where did the dog part come in?
Well, actually, I've always grown up around dogs, and I can remember this is gonna date me very much, but there used to be a Lassie radio show on once a week, and I would I loved the show, right? Lassie would come in to the room and she'd bark, ruff, 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 and the mom of the time would say, oh my God, I told Timmy to stay away from the tractor and now he's gotten himself in trouble. Quick, Lassie, run over to the Smith place, old Doc Connors is there, and bring help.
Yeah.
And Lassie would go ruff, 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 and would run off to go, and of course, I couldn't figure out what she was saying, and I would listen to the barks, and we all knew, of course, that she'd get to the Smith place, and Doc Connors would recognize what she was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at the dog which I had was a little beagle by the name of Skippy, and I was very fond of him. But, I understood when he wagged his tail a little bit, and I, understood when he was indicating that he was hungry, which was all the time. And I really wanted to be able to understand dogs, and so I was talking to my grandfather at that point in time, and mentioned this to him. I really wanted to be able to understand what dogs were saying and be able to communicate with them and that sort of thing. And he did what he always did in those circumstances, is he told a story.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, he said, you know, King Solomon had three rings. And he had a really fine gold ring, which, you know, gave him victory over all of his enemies. And he had a fine platinum ring, which gave him victory over any of the evil spirits. And he had, after he had built the temple, God asked him what he wanted, and he said, you know, he wanted a ring to be able to understand the animals. And mm-hmm. so it was all cast on one night, and it was a very crude silver ring, but it allowed him to understand the animals. And when Solomon died, that ring, which, you know, God said was a special gift to Solomon, so he couldn't take it back, was hidden in a house with many doors. And, you know, and so I thought to myself, oh, well, you know, I'll never find that ring. And then, you know, just the way things happened, you know, I was listening to another radio show at that time, and they were interviewing Einstein. And he was then a professor at Princeton. And Einstein referred to science being a house with many doors.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, that was the secret my grandfather was trying to tell me, was that if I studied science, I would be able to understand my dogs. And that's how it got started.
Well, the first part of your book, I always appreciate new information, and there's a few little topics that I want to talk to you about today. But the first part of your book, you talk about that at the very end of this chapter, talking about Neanderthals versus humans and how dogs, if this scientific speculation is correct, while it may appear that humans have controlled the dog's evolution, dogs may well have played a major role in determining the evolutionary path of humans. In essence, dogs decided which of the species, early humanoids, would control this world, and the Neanderthals lost out. And the reason being that Neanderthals as a species didn't connect with dogs at all, whereas
nope.
Cro-Magnon pre-humans or humans did.
That's right. And it's really very interesting. I mean, you know, anthropologists, you know, run around sort of tearing their hair out because, you know, they take a look at Neanderthal, and Neanderthal was, you know, was a really strong critter, sort of stronger than the group which sort of emerged from Cro-Magnon. And he had a big brain.
Mm-hmm.
And there's evidence that he had some social, you know, interactions and could make tools and, you know, had some religious beliefs, you know. So he had all the things which one would suggest might, in fact, allow him to survive. And why did this sort of weaker group survive was always the question. And it's now becoming clear that one good possibility is that Neanderthals never formed any sort of association with dogs. You see, you have to understand what was happening at that point in time. This was a pretty dangerous era. You know, lots of, you know, big animals going around and probably, you know, marauding bands of humans. Dogs began to associate with man by sort of, you know, hanging out outside the village. I mean, the bottom line is that primitive man was a good hunter, but he was basically a slob.
Yeah.
And so what he would do is any unused parts of the animals which he hunted, he would sort of toss outside the village. And, you know, the great-grandfathers of dogs sort of looked at this stuff and said, you know, well, you know, this is a free buffet. Why go hunting? And so they sort of hang around over there. And primitive man was perfectly willing to put up with having him around because, you know, he ate this stuff, and so that kept down the vermin and the smell and that sort of thing. But there was a second benefit, and that benefit was that they began to view that area as their territory. So if a wild beast or strangers arrived, they would set up a commotion. And that gave an early warning function
mm-hmm.
for for Primitive Ben. That was enough time to, you know, to rally a defense and that sort of thing. And after a while, you know, somebody came up with the notion, well, you know, if a dog hanging around outside the village is a you know, can serve as an alarm for things happening to the village, then a dog inside my house can serve as an alarm if anything's going to happen there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we brought the dogs in. Already now you can see that there's a bit of a survival function because the Neanderthals are not going to have that early warning function. But then the Ice Age hit. And basically what happened was that Neanderthals, were big, you know, men, and they hunted really big animals. They used basically spears and axes and that sort of thing. And they would hunt for the really big animals, and killing one of those animals would keep a village for a week or so, quite happily. But then when the Ice Age came in, those big animals began to die off, and Cro-Magnon apparently developed the bow. And the thing about the bow is, an arrow usually does not kill, it wounds. And that then allows you to track down the animal and finally kill it. And you could use it for much, much smaller animals. And it turns out that the dog is absolutely perfectly suited for that kind of hunting because, you know, you wound the animal over there and the dog will pursue it and pull it down for you.
Mm-hmm.
So here we had two ways in which dog was going to help the survival. First of all, he was going to protect the village by sounding alarm, and second of all, help gather food during these really hard times. And that seems to be, part of what gave this particular line of humanoids the advantage. I mean, later on, when they developed animal husbandry, they became incredibly vital at that point in time because one man and a dog could control, a herd of sheep or cattle or whatever else, which would take 10 men to control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, really very interesting. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back with Dr. Stanley Coren, author of The Modern Dog, we're going to talk about another part of your book, which sort of goes along here, is the evolution of the gun dog, which I thought was very interesting. So we'll be back in just a couple minutes with the Dog Talk Show on Alternative Talk 1150.
The Natural Pet Pantry offers everything you need for feeding your pet a raw food diet. Most health issues pets face today are a result of poor diet. The Natural Pet Pantry makes raw, cooked, and custom meals for your pets, all prepared locally using only grade A meats and vegetables. Located in stores around the Puget Sound, the home delivery is available from Stanwood to Gig Harbor. Visit naturalpetpantry.com or call 206-248-1079 for more information on how to add health and longevity to your beloved pet's life. That's naturalpetpantry.com.
This is Julie Forbes, dog training, behavior, and nutrition specialist, and owner of Sensitive Dog, thoughtful guidance for you and your dog. If your dog needs basic obedience training, a behavior evaluation, or food consultation, I can help you. Call me at 206-372-7399 or visit my website, www.sensitivedog.com. I teach group obedience classes, in-home lessons, and evaluations, and a two-week intensive training program called Higher Education. Again, I'm Julie Forbes, Seattle's dog behavior training and nutrition specialist. www.sensitivedog.com.
Wellness Natural Food for Pets uses simple, pure, authentic ingredients to create food you can trust to provide the foundation of your pet's well-being. All wellness recipes include lean meats, whole grains, fruits, and veggies with no meat byproducts, no wheat, no corn, no soy, or artificial preservatives. For an exclusive savings offer and to find Wellness at a pet specialty retailer near you, visit wellnesspetfood.com/Seattle. That's wellnesspetfood.com/Seattle. Join Wellness on Facebook and Twitter today.
I'm Joy Turner, host of Talk With Your Animals, now on Thursdays at 1 p.m. I take your calls and talk with your animal companions about anything you'd like to know from them. You can also talk with your loved ones, both human and animals, on the other side. Tune in to Talk With Your Animals Thursdays at 1 with me, Joy Turner. Thanks for listening.
Do you have an injury, old or new, that won't heal? Are you fighting a cold or illness you can't kick? Do you feel like you've tried everything and are still struggling to find wellness and balance in your physical health? Have you been unimpressed with acupuncture in the past? For over a decade, Robert Meduzia has been making a difference for people who thought they had exhausted their options. Don't settle for pain and illness. Call 425-828-6190. That's 425-828-6190. Again, 425-828-6190. The Acupuncture and Sports Clinic of Kirkland. Heal faster, play longer.
News, traffic, and weather? Now you can get your information fixed weekdays on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
The party was nice, the party was bumping. Hey, yeah. And
welcome back to the Dog Talk Show. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk 1150. And we're back today with author Stanley Coren of The Modern Dog, How Dogs Have Changed People and Society and Improved Our Lives. Welcome back, Dr. Coren.
Glad to be here.
So we're talking a little bit about way, way back and how it's really interesting that one of the main factors of why humans evolved and Neanderthals did not and went extinct was because humans, the Cro-Magnons at the time, had formed a partnership with dogs and the benefits of that and, you know, how that pretty much got them through the Ice Age and just such an interesting topic. And so another part of moving along in time of the evolution of dogs was the evolution of the gun dog and basically starting with hounds. And it seems like hounds were kind of the early, you know, greyhounds and the sight hounds and stuff back in Egyptian times, that they seem to be some of the earliest breeds.
That's right. Actually, the guess is that the greyhound was the first really separately selected breed. We have all sorts of evidence that greyhounds were looked pretty much the way they did today, except mm-hmm. maybe for the way they carry their tails. They tended to carry their tails a little bit higher.
And that would explain why greyhounds are universal blood donors for dogs, because they were one of the first.
It could be, and it's certainly the case that this has been recognized for a long time, because the very term greyhound is a mistranslation. It comes from the German, which is Bruhund, mm-hmm. which really means old or ancient dog.
Mm.
And they really were. I mean, you know, somebody gave me a wonderful reproduction of a statue of two greyhounds, you know, sitting. And it was a reproduction of something which was done 2,500 years ago during the Greek Golden Era,
mm-hmm.
and they look absolutely identical to the same greyhounds that you would see walking down the street today.
Hmm.
See, the thing which you were talking about the hunting dogs is really, you know, one of those fascinating things which helps to prove that, you know, God may have created man, but man really created dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things is, you know, when we started, one of your colleagues had said, you know, well, what's the difference between the modern dog and the, you know, the earlier dogs? Well, in fact, dogs are continually changing. If you look at for example, something like a Cairn Terrier, and you look at it from, you know, the turn of last century, and you look at today's Cairn, it looks totally different.
Mm.
And we're constantly changing the shape and the behavior of the dogs to fit our lifestyles and even to fit our technology. And that's the beauty of sort of what the hunting dog is all about. See, the earliest hunting dogs were the hounds. They mm-hmm. were either the sight hounds, like the greyhounds, which ran things down, mm-hmm. or the scent hounds, which, you know, tracked them. And the trick was that these things, you know, if it was small game, they just pull it down, and all the hunter had to do was to get there, and, you know, before the dogs ate it all. If it was large game, then they would sort of hold it at bay, and the hunters could come and kill it. But then what happened is we began to develop, you know, better hunting instruments. So, you know, we began to develop sort of the muzzle-loading musket. Now, you know, that was an improvement, but it still took time. I mean, you know, had to, you know, for each shot, you know, you had to pour in the powder and drop in the bowl and tamp things, and, you know, so it took maybe 30 seconds or something like that to reload, and then you got a shot, which was maybe, if you're really lucky, good for about 50 yards. So basically we needed a dog then which would detect the game, which would detect a bird or something like that, but would move very slowly and quietly. And once it detected the game, it would just hold in place until the guy with that clumsy musket would get close enough to make that one shot that he had work. And so that's when we developed pointers. And they, you know, they're really quite wonderful, but they move slowly and silently and then hold in position, sort of staring at where they think the bird was. Then we began to develop the guns, which would load a little bit faster. And so we developed setters. Now, setters move much more swiftly, and it's usual to hunt with setters in pairs because they'll freeze staring at the bush where they think the bird is. And if you sight down the heads of the two dogs, you could sort of triangulate and find out exactly where the bird is and still get very, very close. And then we developed the really good, the shotguns, which were capable of, knocking down birds at a distance. So we developed the Spaniels. And Spaniels just, they quarter totally undisciplined hunters. It's wonderful sort of working behind Spaniels. And they'll flush the game, and it's very exciting. And then they'll retrieve it for you, obviously, at the end. But then the Industrial Revolution comes in, and the Industrial Revolution starts taking away all of those good hunting lands, so that that's all being turned into farmland. People are moving into the cities, and things are being turned into factories and that sort of thing. So the only place where the hunters could hunt then was really in scrap land, which was not, which wasn't desirable for other purposes, marshy land and that kind of thing. So that changed the nature of hunting, and also we changed the nature of dogs to fit that. So that now, for example, we would go out and build blinds and wait for the ducks to fly over. So you needed a dog to, who would sit very quietly and not make any kind of commotion. And then when you knock down a bird, he would, go through the cold water and stuff and pick it up. So we developed the retrievers. And the retrievers really are sort of very attentive to us. They're very quiet and, very focused and that sort of thing. And then, fewer and fewer ducks began to, we began to sort of, weed them down. So the newest invention in the hunting dog is the Nova Scotia duck tolling retriever. And, his task is the following. He's a small dog. He's a small little red and white dog. And his task is to run up and down along the shore and make a commotion, spin around and act absolutely crazy. And the ducks, look at that and say, what the blazes is going on over there? So they fly over to get closer to see what happens. And, they get within the hunter's range, and the hunter, knocks them down, and then the dog turns into a proper little retriever. So, it would be very interesting. I mean, I always wonder, in the next, 200 or 300 years, what are hunting dogs going to look like? Yeah. Maybe carry lasers around with them.
Right. Now, the behavior of the duck toller was modeled after that of a fox or foxes. Isn't that right? Where they would... The ducks
that's how it started. It started by people noticing that if a fox was sort of, twirling around and acting wonky, and that the ducks would come closer or swim closer or that sort of thing. And actually, some foxes would do that to set up an ambush. So one fox would act, spooky, and the ducks would get closer, and the other fox, its mate, would be, in ambush. And it was observing that, which that's the reason why they made them little red and white dogs. They didn't know what was really attracting the birds, so they made them look sort of foxy. So they're sort of foxy colored and have a bushy tail with a white flash at the end of it, that sort of thing.
And you have a toller, right?
Yep. I have an old toller. He's a nice dog, but of course, by retriever standards, he's very, very active and very, very noisy. Mm-hmm. Because, And every now and then it drives my wife slightly crazy. And you know, I have to remind her, you know, well, that's what he was bred to do. If he wasn't, you know, spinny and noisy, then he would be his breed.
Yeah. I have a friend of mine who lives in Vermont, has a duck toller who he was working with, you know, trying to train him to bring the ducks back. He was using a decoy, and then he took the dog out hunting, and I think the first time he actually got a duck, and then he sent the dog out. The dog's name's Otis, and Otis brought back the decoy, not the real duck. So...
yes, training can be quite specific at times. That's the reason why, you know, later on in training retrievers, you usually flip over to you know, dead ducks.
Now, why is it that, so going back to, like, Labrador retrievers, they're, you know, the labs have this reputation for being that type of dog that will just sit patiently, and that's why they make such good service dogs and that sort of thing. But I've heard people say that there's the English labs, which are the ones with the big blocky heads and they're stockier, and then there's the field bred American labs that are actually quite the opposite.
Well, actually, there are enough flavors of Labrador retrievers that, you know, we could almost start dividing the breed up. Initially, the Labrador retrievers were supposed to be pocket retrievers. So they were supposed to be no larger than about 22 inches at the shoulder. So they were dogs which, you know, you kept in the house with you, you know, and that sort of thing. What started to happen is that different people decided that they wanted, you know, different aspects of the dog. So in the UK, the houses are a lot smaller, and hunting season is shorter, and the demands on a dog are to be, you know, particularly quiet. So they started to scale the labs down. So as you said, they're blockier, but they're also shorter. So it's not unusual to have an English style lab, which is, you know, only 20 inches at the shoulder, and they're much quieter.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, in the north, especially in Alaska, for example, they wanted bigger, stronger retrievers because the dogs are working in snow and rough terrain and that sort of thing. You don't want a dog, you know, plowing its underside through the snow.
Right.
And so they started to create, pardon me, Labrador retrievers, which are much taller, much larger, some of them up to 26 inches at the shoulder or more.
Mm-hmm.
And those particular dogs, you know, they look quite different. I mean, some of them look like Shetland, ponies.
Yeah.
I should not talk so fast with my cold. Anyway, there are also the dogs which are used in a lot of competition today, and a lot of the retriever people who do retriever trials like their dogs to be a lot lighter built with a more air under them, because that allows them to run faster, and so you'll see a lot of the field competition dogs are much more lightly built, although they'll still be about the same size.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you look, there's even an obedience line of Labrador retrievers. And these are really high-activity animals.
Mm.
It seems that having a high level of activity is very important. And just to complicate things one more step, there are some people who have decided that they want to make the lab the ultimate utility hunting dog. So they're breeding a line of Labrador retrievers that point. So they not only retrieve, but they point. So these are pointing Labrador retrievers. Mm.
It's not the labs of not just the one version of the lab anymore.
Hmm. No, but you know, you can do this with a breed like the lab, because the lab right now is and has been for about 30 years, the most popular dog in the world.
Yep. Well, Dr. Corin, we need to take a quick break, so hold that thought, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to the Dog Talk Show on Alternative Talk 1150.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog,
Electric Incorporated is a full-service electrical contractor. From simple home repairs to full remodels, new construction, and small commercial projects, our qualified electricians do it all. We pride ourselves on our workmanship and professional standards, delivered with value in mind. Located in historic Ballard, Kemmley Electric serves the greater Seattle metropolitan area. Licensed, bonded, and insured. Kemmley Electric welcomes all inquiries about your electrical needs. Visit the website KemmleyElectric.com. That's K-E-M-L-Y Electric.com.
Are you a doctor, dentist, or therapist? Have you ever wished you could take your dog to work with you? Visit HealingAllies.com to find out how you can train your dog to become a clinical therapy dog in your office or clinic. Clinical therapy dogs provide people with joy, affection, and emotional support in healthcare settings. Research shows that therapy animals have positive psychological and physiological effects on clients and patients. Meet your newest staff member, your dog. Visit HealingAllies.com or call 206-406-1455 for more information. That's HealingAllies.com.
Do you want to improve your health, take less medicine, or avoid medication at all? The naturopathic physicians at the Institute of Complementary Medicine, with over 60 years of experience, will help you on natural, practical solutions for better health. Ready for your annual checkup, feeling stressed or anxious, or have a chronic problem like allergies, diabetes, or sleep issues? Call 206-726-0034. Or go to www.icmedicine.com to schedule an appointment. We're located on First Hill in Seattle, and most insurance is accepted. 206-726-0034. icmedicine.com. Natural medicine at its best.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Jones & Company Pets in Marysville, we cover the world of living successfully with your animal friends. This week, it's the fourth Sunday of a five-Sunday month, and that means it's a Kim Sunday. Kim Miller Medium, an animal intuitive, will be in the studio to take your calls. She'll help you communicate with your animal or human loved ones on the other side or your animal friends on this side. So join us for Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Wellness Natural Food for Pets uses simple, pure, authentic ingredients to create food you can trust to provide the foundation of your pet's well-being. All wellness recipes include lean meats, whole grains, fruits, and veggies with no meat byproducts, no wheat, no corn, no soy, or artificial preservatives. For an exclusive savings offer and to find Wellness at a pet specialty retailer near you, visit wellnesspetfood.com/Seattle. That's wellnesspetfood.com/Seattle. Join Wellness on Facebook and Twitter today.
Like what you hear? Be sure and support the sponsors who support your favorite programs on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back to the Dog Talk Show. You're listening to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. I'm your host, Julie Forbes, and we are back with Dr. Stanley Corin, author of The Modern Dog, How Dogs Have Changed People and Society and Improved Our Lives. Welcome back, Dr. Corin.
Hi there.
So I'm going to take this opportunity to open up the lines. If anyone has any questions for Dr. Corin, feel free to call in. You can also call in if you'd like a free copy of the book. We have a few books to give away to our listeners. So if you'd like to receive a copy of the book in the mail, give us a call and we'll get your address and send one out to you. The number to call is 425-373-5527. That's 425-373-5527. 5527 to receive a free copy of The Modern Dog, or toll free in Western Washington, 888-298-5569. So you can give us a call, and Darcy, our call screener, will get your address and we'll get a book out to you. So thank you, Dr. Korn, for those free copies of books for our listeners today.
Mm-hmm.
So we were talking about the evolution of the gun dog and how that basically changed, the breeds of dog changed with the technology. And there's another part of the book where you talk about, or you answer the question, why dogs sniff each other's tails.
Mm-hmm.
Or areas.
Yes.
And not just other dogs, but people as well. And I think you said any mammal. And it's basically because of pheromones, and that they are located in a special kind of sweat gland called apocrine glands, which are highly concentrated in genital areas.
Yeah, it's around the genital areas. And in human beings, it's in the underarms and in the genital areas. And for the dogs, it's they have many more apocrine glands sort of scattered over their body. But again, the big concentration is you know, in that rear area around the tail.
Mm-hmm. And so it's not it's funny because I've certainly had this experience because I do dog training and behavior consultation here in Seattle. And so when I come to people's houses, when their dogs come up, they often, you know, will sniff my crotch, and people are so embarrassed and, oh, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, hey, your dog's just getting information. I'm not offended for sure.
Yeah, dogs can read a whole lot of information from that sniff. They can read roughly the age of other dogs, whether they're sexually mature or sexually active, their health status, and there's an awful lot of information there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're saying that they can tell in females if they are menstruating or if they're ovulating or if they're pregnant or if they've just had a baby or if they're lactate. I mean, all this kind of stuff.
That's right. And they can even, apparently there's some evidence that dogs can even read sort of, you know, certain aspects of emotional state from that little sniff.
Yeah, it had mentioned something about moods. And then, you know, in thinking about dogs that, like, detect seizures or that detect blood sugar, that...
There it's a little bit more ambiguous.
Uh-huh.
I mean, our best guess is that it's probably a chemical signal. So when somebody's about to have a seizure, very subtly their scent changes.
Mm-hmm.
But it also could be a different kind of a cue. It could be a visual cue, because dogs are really the masters at reading body language. And they can pick up very, very subtle cues which people give off. So, for example, we have trained dogs to be Parkinson's alert dogs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Parkinson's people sometimes will have... something like a seizure, in which basically the body sort of, you know, freezes up and it's very difficult for them to move. And dogs start to recognize that right away, and we assume that in that particular case it's from actually watching rather than sniffing.
Hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I can't even conceive of really what dog's sense of smell must be like. I really can't even, my brain can't really wrap around it, but they just are so observant. I mean, our cattle dog, like I was telling you, he will watch our faces, especially after he's just gotten into trouble. He'll run away and stop what he's doing and then come right back in and look at us. And like, oh, are you still mad? What's your mood now?
They're very good at this. And it's one of the reasons why some people... You know, there's lots of stories out of there of people who say, you know, my dog has ESP, you know, and you know, I came home and I'd just broken up with my boyfriend or whatever else, and my dog knew it right away. Well, I mean, the dog picks up the way that we walk, and when we're depressed, you know, our shoulders sort of fold in a little bit, our head droops a little bit, and we move in a different way. And there are lots of times that that's what the dog is reading. And we've bred dogs to read our signals. I mean, that's one of the fascinating aspects about dogs. If I point to something, then the dog recognizes that that's a communication gesture, and he will look in the direction that I point, even if he's a fairly young puppy.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if I have a wolf, and this is even if this wolf has been reared, you know, in my family since he was a pup,
mm-hmm.
and I point to something, he looks at my hand.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't recognize that that's a communication gesture.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've been modifying dogs so that they read our human signals, and they do a wonderful job at it.
Would you, I've often wondered this because, you know, minimum, I've said this many times on my show, dogs have been living with people for a minimum of 14,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so if, you know, litter after litter after litter, puppy after puppy after puppy, breed more puppies, raising them from puppies, you know, all this happening over such a long period of time. I wonder how, you know, what the impact is on dogs as a species and how, I mean, not only are they good at reading us, but would you think that it would be accurate to say that they as a species are becoming more human-like?
No, they're becoming more attentive to humans.
Okay.
You know, a lot of what's been going on for the past 14,000 years has really been sort of seat-of-the-pants behavior genetics, okay? You've got two dogs, okay? One of them reads your gestures really well, and the other one not so well. So which one do you like better? Well, you like the one who reads you better, and that one gets a little bit better food, gets a little bit better care, and is more likely to be bred.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it works. You know, it's sort of, you know, little bits of little nudges. You have a dog who has particular characteristics which you like, you breed it because you hope the puppies will have that particular characteristic. So dogs have been developing a set of characteristics to sort of fit our needs. One of the most important is obviously, the ability to read us and to be able to understand, our gestures and that sort of thing. But there are other characteristics also. I mean, like reading our emotional state, like your cattle dog does.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we affect things like activity levels. A dog who ricochets off of the floors, walls, and ceilings, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that's not a dog you're going to want to breed. And, you know, so our dogs tend to, you know, calm down or increase in activity depending upon what it is which we're looking for. Mm-hmm. Right now, the best estimates is that the mind of a dog is roughly equivalent to a mind of a human 2-year-old. And that's sort of the average dog. So he can then understand things like about 165 words, and that includes signs and signals and gestures and that sort of thing. And the super dogs, those are the ones in the top 20% in terms of canine intelligence,
mm-hmm.
are equivalent to about a human 2.5-year-old. So they can understand up around 250 words, signs, signals, that sort of thing. That's pretty good by animal standards.
I mean, that's
really quite remarkable. But one of the neat things is that we can get those estimates by taking tests which were originally designed for human beings,
mm-hmm.
for kids with minimal language and that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
and modifying them for dogs.
Well, that gives us the estimate. Yeah. I wonder if, you know, another, 500 years from now, we start finding that the most intelligent breeds are testing more like a 3-year-old instead of a 2.5-year-old, and, you know, give it another 10,000 years, if assuming we survive that long. You know, it's just really interesting to look at the big picture of how dogs as a species are evolving along with us, because I know humans seem to be getting to be higher and higher energy and technology and all this kind of stuff, and the dogs have been with us right alongside. So
yeah, some people talk about this as a co-evolution.
Yeah,
where one species' evolutionary course is influenced by another.
Mm-hmm.
Now obviously we're doing most of the influencing.
Yeah.
But we did see earlier when we were talking about the Neanderthal that, you know, they did have, the dog's got a paw in there.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Dr. Corin, your book is wonderful. There's so much more to it. And the phone lines lit up when I announced that we were giving away some copies of the book. So we've got some listeners who will receive that book in about a week. And I hope to have you back on the show sometime and we can talk a little bit more about, you know, these questions. Can a dog really love? And, you know,
all the good emotional stuff.
All the good emotional stuff. And thanks so much for being on the show with us today. It was a real pleasure and really an honor because your name, I've known your name for 15 years now in the dog world. So thanks so much.
All right. Thanks for having me. Okay. You take care.
You too. Bye. Oh, yeah. So that was really just the first, less than the first 100 pages of the book that we touched on today. So let's take our last break, and we'll be back with a few more minutes of the Dog Talk Show. You're listening to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Standing on a corner with the lowdown blues, a great big hole in the bottom of his shoes. Honey, let me be your salty dog.
Camley Electric Incorporated is a full-service electrical contractor. From simple home repairs to full remodels, new construction, and small commercial projects, our qualified electricians do it all. We pride ourselves on our workmanship and professional standards, delivered with value in mind. Located in historic Ballard, Camley Electric serves the greater Seattle metropolitan area. Licensed, bonded, and insured. Camley Electric welcomes all inquiries about your electrical needs. Visit the website KemleyElectric.com. That's K-E-M-L-Y Electric.com.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick and Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
This is Julie Forbes, dog training, behavior, and nutrition specialist and owner of Sensitive Dog, thoughtful guidance for you and your dog. If your dog needs basic obedience training, a behavior evaluation, or food consultation, I can help you. Call me at 206-372-7399 or visit my website, www.sensitivedog.com. I teach group obedience classes, in-home lessons, and evaluations, and a two-week intensive training program called Higher Education. Again, I'm Julie Forbes, Seattle's dog behavior training and nutrition specialist, www.sensitivedog.com.
Do you want to improve your health, take less medicine, or avoid medication at all? The naturopathic physicians at the Institute of Complementary Medicine, with over 60 years of experience, will help you on natural, practical solutions for better health. Ready for your annual checkup, feeling stressed or anxious, or have a chronic problem like allergies, diabetes, or sleep issues? Call 206-726-0034 or go to www.icmedicine.com to schedule an appointment. We're located on First Hill in Seattle, and most insurance is accepted. 206-726-0034. icmedicine.com. Natural medicine at its best.
Notice anything different? You should. There's no other station like Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back to the Dog Talk Show. You're listening to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. That was a great interview with Dr. Stanley Corin, author of The Modern Dog, and also author of How Dogs Think and The Intelligence of Dogs. He has been writing wonderful books about dogs for, I know, at least 15 years, because I read his books when I was in high school. So, Eric, we haven't done any Dog Talk Show trivia in a while.
We haven't.
And I've got some wellness pet food gift vouchers that are burning a hole in my pocket that I've just got to get rid of. So,
fantastic.
So let's do some trivia. $50 in wellness pet food gift vouchers we've got to give away to the first caller who can name a dog breed that begins with the letter D, as in dog. Call 425-373-5527, 425-373-5527, or toll free in Western Washington, 888-298-5569. If you can tell me a dog breed that begins with the letter D, that's all you have to do, then we will send you out $50 in wellness pet food gift vouchers. So those numbers again, 425-373-5527.
That should be an easy one, but I'm telling you, I'm blanking. I know I'm not eligible to play anyway.
It's not.
I'm blanking on that.
It's not. I don't know. I mean, I think D is probably a lesser of the dog breed.
Less obvious, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Some of them, there's a whole ton of them. Wow.
The phone lines are lighting up.
Yeah,
so we're bound to get some more D breeds than we thought even existed.
Yeah.
Out there.
Well, I can think of, I mean, just off the top of my head, I can only think of a few just right off the bat. So so let's take line one. We have Linda on line one. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
So do you have a dog breed that begins with the letter D?
Dalmatian.
Good
Dachshund.
One. Yeah. Got any more?
No, but I have an Australian Blue Heeler Shepherd dog.
Oh, you do?
And I can tell him to go get my hammer, and he'll bring it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Or he'll, if I'm standing outside, I'll say, Luther, pull that weed out, and he'll pull it out. I mean, he's like a human in a dog suit. He's a great dog.
Yeah, our cattle dog is like that as well.
Yeah,
I mean,
they're smart, aren't they?
It's freaky how smart he is.
I think it is freaky.
I think we think he's smarter than we are sometimes.
I wonder.
Yeah. All right, well, good work. We're going to send you back to Darcy and get
great.
Your mailing information. We'll send you out $50 in gift vouchers to Wellness Pet Food.
Thanks. I learned a lot listening to your show. I really appreciate it.
Good. Thanks for listening.
You bet.
Okay.
Thank
bye.
Thank you.
Boy, she Johnny on the spot, or Linda on the spot, so to speak.
Yeah. Dalmatian and Dachshund. She said two.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder if...
Are there more?
I wonder if line two can give me another dog breed that begins with the letter D other than Dalmatian and Dachshund. So let's talk to Miles on line two. Hi, Miles.
That begins with the letter D.
Oh.
I was going to say Dachshund as well.
Do you have another one that you can think of?
I don't.
All right. It's a tough one. It's a tough one. Well, Miles, we're going to get your mailing address, and we're going to send you some Biddle Love dog treats out for calling in.
I appreciate that. I have a Rhodesian Ridgeback, but no D dog.
All right. Well, we'll send you out some Biddle Love treats. They're great for training for your Ridgeback.
That's great.
All right. So just hang on the line, Miles. We're going to send you to Darcy and get your mailing information.
Let's see if we can find a third D breed.
Yeah, I know. I can think of one. So let's go to Angelie on line four. Hi, Angelie.
Hello.
So can you tell me a D breed other than Dachshund or Dalmatian?
I can. I actually, both of those came to the tip of my tongue, but how about a Doberman?
Ooh, good one. Doberman Retriever.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, Doberman Retriever. we were just talking about retrievers.
New breed right there.
That's right.
The whole interview, we're talking about how we're making all these new breeds, suit our needs.
Well, Doberman Retriever. Man, Doberman Pinscher, of course. Well, good work, Angelie. And I think I've got another $50 in wellness pet food gift vouchers hanging around. So we'll get that out to you.
We have a yellow lab border collie mix. It was a rescue dog.
Uh-huh. Smart dog, would you say?
Very smart, very high energy.
Yeah.
We have a 5-year-old and a 1-year-old, and the dog's, you know, like 2-year-old.
Yeah, yeah. Three kids, basically.
Exactly.
Well, thanks so much for listening and for calling in and playing Dog Talk Show Trivia. We're going to put you on hold and send you back to Darcy and get your mailing information.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks.
I love it.
So I've got another one.
Do we have time? We've got like 90 seconds.
All right. Yep. Dandy Dinmont.
Oh.
That's a double D.
Oh, I thought you had another trivia question.
No, another D breed.
Dandy Dinmont.
Yeah, okay. Yes, lesser known.
Yeah, very, very lesser known in my book.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to get out a couple of announcements, and I do have a dog dedication song this week for Otis, the duck tolling retriever that I was talking about in Vermont. He's my dear friend Matt's dog, the duck toller that brought back the decoy, not the actual duck. So we're going to dedicate this show and the dedication song to him. Also wanted to let everybody know that I have an agility class, a just for fun agility class starting tomorrow night at the Barking Lounge. You can go to www.barkinglounge.com to get their contact information. It's 6:30 to 7:30 starting tomorrow, Thursday. What's the date tomorrow, Eric? Do you know?
Tomorrow's the 19th.
So it's a just for fun. It's not competitive. It's really just getting some mental and physical exercise for both people and dogs. You can also email me, julie@sensitivedog.com, for more information. So that's it for this week. We'll see you same time, same place next week. Thanks for listening to the Dog Talk Show on Alternative Talk 1150.
That I've ever seen. Got a nose that can smell a two-day trail. He's a four-legged tracking machine. You can consider yourself mighty lucky to get past the gators and the quicksand beds. But all these years that I've been here, ain't nobody got past red.
Views expressed on the